Welcome back to another episode of For Insight. I'm your host, Mike Obi. Joining me is another familiar face, my big bro, Bernard Obi. Bernard, how are you? There's a bit of lag.
How are you doing?
Doing good, man. Doing good. So we just had a great weekend of championship games in the NFL. First off, we'll start off in the NFC. We had a matchup of two legends, two GOATs in Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. Bernard, just what did you think of the game and the result and just your overall reaction looking back at it?
Well, I was surprised that Aaron Rodgers didn't pull it off for the Packers. He had a chance, towards the end of the game at the goal line. So, you know, usually he's some money in the red zone. But what's even more surprising is Tom Brady. He threw three interceptions and still won the game. So that's really what surprised me, because usually if you throw multiple interceptions, especially in a half, then you're usually losing that football game. So, yeah, I give credit to Tom Brady and his team for doing well and pulling it out.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't a pretty game, but it was also what you would want as a fan. You know, back and forth, mistakes being made, plays being made, and, a full 60-minute wire-to-wire game where, you know, there was no blowout. You kind of were on the edge of your seat, so to speak. And, you know, it was two great teams and two evenly matched teams. And, you know, I know everybody gets on Matt LaFleur, and the reaction has been, why didn't he go for it on fourth down? To me, I don't even like blaming the coach for one play. You had multiple opportunities to either maintain a lead, get a lead, or make sure that you didn't put yourself in that situation. The fact of the matter is you didn't have the lead, and, you know, the decision was made, and you ended up losing the game. I mean, it is what it is, but, you know, hindsight is always 20/20. People can always do the Monday morning quarterbacking and coaching, but, you know, in the end, somebody has to win, somebody has to lose. It just is part of the game.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, in the end, I mean, you can always say, oh, you should have done this, you should have done that. But if the result of the game would have been different, then no one is saying that stuff. So,
absolutely. Now, going over to the AFC, the Bills take on the Chiefs. And, you know, while many people seem to have doubted the Chiefs during the regular season, felt like they didn't take the regular season seriously, or that maybe there's a bit of Super Bowl hangover, they've proven all those doubters wrong, and they have came out like wildfire. And, you know, they played a really good game. Patrick Mahomes did his thing despite, you know, coming off of concussion protocol and having turf toe, seemed to not have missed a beat. Tyreek Hill had a great game, as well as Travis Kelce. Give me your reaction to just the Chiefs handling the Bills in a pretty easy manner.
So, I mean, for anyone who's saying that the Chiefs are experiencing a Super Bowl hangover, you go 14-2 after you went to the Super Bowl, that's some hangover. I wish my hangovers were that good. But, yeah, give the Chiefs credit. I mean, they are who they are. They know who they are, and they don't really miss a beat. You know, I think the biggest thing for them is they know what they do well, and they do it better than anybody else. And that's kind of what the great teams do. They make sure that once they know what they are good at, they do that and make sure they perfect it. You know what I'm saying? They don't try to get outside of who they are. They don't try to do a lot of uncharacteristic things. The defense, you know, their defense is a bend, don't break. That's just kind of what they've embraced themselves as. They're not trying to be, you know, a shutdown defense. They're just trying to make sure that as long as their team scores more than the opponents, they did their job, you know. So, yeah, and, you know, Tyreek Hill, he's super impressive to me. I mean, that guy right there, he's probably one of the most impressive runners of the football, whether it be receiver, running back, return man, whatever. He's the most impressive that I've ever seen. I mean, the guy moves so fast. I mean, and it's like – he doesn't stop accelerating until he gets tackled, which is crazy. So,
yeah, absolutely. And then you have, Travis Kelce, just the elite wide receiver playing tight end, you know, a big body, but then can really move and really has wiggle to his game. So he's a nightmare for opposing defenders, because you put a linebacker on him, he's too big, he's too quick, he's too fast. But then if you put a safety or defensive back on him, you know, he's too strong and he can outmuscle. So, I mean, definitely, you know, in terms of great tight ends that have played through Kansas City, they had Tony Gonzalez, and then they go to Travis Kelce. So, I mean, they look really, really scary. But before we even look at the Super Bowl matchup, let's just talk about where the Packers and the Bills go from here. So the Packers had a great season, but, you know, Aaron Rodgers is getting up there in age. Looking at their team and their current situation, what do you think the Packers go from here? Do you think they're on their way down? Is just a minor tweak, or they just got to run it back?
I mean, it depends on Aaron Rodgers. I mean, everyone's saying that his post-game press conference didn't sound very good, which is giving people some of the indication that he might want out of Green Bay. Can't really blame him. I mean, the way they treated him, no other superstar gets treated like that. Superstar quarterback gets treated outside of maybe Deshaun Watson with the Texans, which that's a whole other topic. But I think that it depends on Aaron Rodgers. And if he wants to come back, then, yeah, I think this time they have no excuses to make sure they get adequate weapons in the draft for him. You need to get him a number two receiver. I know they have Valdez Scantling and Tanyan and some of these other guys in Lazard, but you need to get him a legit, consistent number two receiver, kind of like what the Falcons have with Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. You know what I'm saying? The Bills, they have Stephon Diggs and John Brown. You know what I'm saying? And that's what the good teams do. You know, you have your number, your legit number one who you use your go-to, and then you have your number two who can be able to pick up where number one can't left off. Now in the NFL, you have to have a number one and number two receiver in order to be competitive. You know, the Chiefs have Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. So to me, that's what they need to make sure they do is get Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams a legit number two receiver option. So that way they'll be good to go. They have a decent tight end. They have Aaron Jones, who's a really good running back, in my opinion. So that's what I think needs to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think that brings up a point that we'll get into, just the whole building a team and a franchise not being too comfortable or standing pat. I think that's really been the problem with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, is that they've relied solely on, oh, Aaron Rodgers will get us to the promised land. We'll rely on him. So we're not really going to put the records and pieces around him. But, you know, you look around the league, all the great teams, all the contenders are really trying to be aggressive and push and try to put the most competitive roster they can out there. But looking over in the AFC, and we're looking at the Bills now, they have a great season, great coaching staff. They retained Brian Daboll. They have Sean McDermott. They have Leslie Frazier as defensive coordinator. So where do you see them going? Are they on the way up and ascending? Or is it going to, you know, be a time will tell sort of ordeal? Or do you think they were a one-hitter quitter sort of situation?
No, I think they'll be a team to be reckoned with in the AFC for sure for the years to come. I mean, they have a good defense. They have a good quarterback. They need to address the run game, because run game, it's good, but you always want to have your go-to feature running back. But you have Stephon Diggs. So I think that they'll be a good team. Now, Josh Allen, he took a great big step this past season. Last year, they're extending. You know what I'm saying? They got to the playoffs last year, and they're competitive with the Texans, who were really good last year with Deshaun Watson and that. So I think that they're going to be one of the top three or four teams in the AFC for the next at least 3 to 5 years, you know, depending on if they can keep Josh Allen growing and developing. He has the guy, Stephon Diggs. Again, the defense is pretty good, so I think they'll be around. And plus, for me, I don't really see too many teams in the AFC right now who I think is that much better than them. I mean, obviously, it's really the Chiefs, and then for me, it goes like maybe Bills. I mean, maybe the Steelers, maybe the Titans. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of maybes, a lot of unknowns.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right now in the AFC. So I think that the Bills and Chiefs, that's one and two. And then the Ravens, obviously, you know, they're going to make some noise. They're going to do what they do as long as they can address their needs on offense. I think those will be the top three teams, Ravens, Bills, and Chiefs.
I got you. Now looking ahead to the Super Bowl matchup, we have explosive defending champions in the Kansas City Chiefs with the young and emerging, the emerged Patrick Mahomes now, versus, you know, a team that is led by what most believe is the greatest player, greatest quarterback, at least of all time, and Tom Brady and the Bucks. What is your tell of the tape of the matchup? What are you looking at? And what do you think are the keys to victory? And ultimately, who do you have winning this matchup? It's really good game.
I mean, it's really going to depend on who has the ball last. I think it's going to be that type of game. I don't really see it being low scoring. I think if I had to put like over under on it, it's going to be at minimum in the 60s. That's why I think both offenses are explosive. Both defenses are kind of shaky. I think the Bucks have an advantage on offense, I mean on defense, because of their pass rush. They can definitely get after you. We just saw that with Aaron, how they got after Aaron Rodgers and that offense. But ultimately, though, in the end, I think it's still going to boil down to who's going to have the ball last. You know, and right now, I give a slight advantage to Tom Brady because he's been there, done that. He's seen it all. So I don't think this moment will be too big for him. So I have faith in him, and I don't feel comfortable betting against him. But the thing I do question and do have concerns over is experience in this game, because for most of these guys on the Bucks, it's their first time playing in the Super Bowl, whereas pretty much the whole entire roster from the Chiefs, they were just in the Super Bowl last year. So that all play into it. But in the end, though, you know, I think whichever quarterback can play better for the whole duration of the game, that's who's going to end up winning this game.
Yeah, it's going to be close. You know, for me, The one difference between this Kansas City Chiefs, like you just talked about, is the fact that these guys are battle tested. This isn't some newbie to the Super Bowl. So I think that they're not afraid of the moment. They're not scared of Tom Brady or the Bucks or anything, because they've been there, done that. And if anything, I feel like they honestly faced a harder defense at least last year in the Rams. Now the offense may, you know, provide more challenges, but like you said, it's a bend not break type of defense, and if you're going to get into a shooting match with Patrick Mahomes, you know, that's not a for sure bet to take. I wouldn't put my money on it. You know, as much as, you know, I don't want to doubt Tom Brady, and you know, it's not a safe bet to do that either. I think that this, you know, if you're a person who says that you think that the Chiefs are going to win, you know, I wouldn't think you were crazy. It's really going to come down to, like you said, who has the ball last and which quarterback can put together the most complete game. You know, if you're somebody who makes too many mistakes, that's really going to cost you in this matchup. And, you know, a game where really you need every possession you could possibly have.
But but again, outside of Brady, Rodgers, and then before, maybe last year, Breeze. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it was any other quarterback in the NFL that we're talking about in this game, then I would say you're right. But it's Tom Brady. He's been there, done that. I mean, he's not going to just unless the Chiefs can get after him defensively and this really have a relentless pass rush. Like, that's what seems to be the key to everyone who's beat the Rams, is getting after Tom Brady, make him uncomfortable. Unless that happens, the Bucks will score minimum 30 points in this game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, no doubt. But just looking at the rest of the league going forward, you know, we've already talked about, you know, the four conference champion contenders, but just looking at some of the other playoff teams that are or around. I know you mentioned the Ravens. Let's talk about them, because, you know, they're a very interesting team. Lamar Jackson got his first playoff win, but, you know, they struggled again when it came time to play the Bills, and, you know, Lamar struggled throwing the ball. So what do you see with this Ravens team? What do they need? And are you a believer in Lamar Jackson or not really?
Yeah, I believe Lamar Jackson. I think he's a really good quarterback. I think he can throw the ball well. People may think he can't throw the ball because he doesn't have the typical prototypical throwing motion, or because he's not throwing for 300 yards a game and what have you. But same time, though, look who he has as receivers. They're not anything to rave about. I mean, you have Hollywood Brown, who's a deep threat, but that's all he really is. He's not like a Tyreek Hill type of deep threat where, yeah, he can take the top off, but at the same time, he can run a lot of routes where you can throw him the dink and dunk passes. It's really he's most effective with the deep balls. I think that they're tied in. I think it's Hayden Hurst still.
I think that's
who their tight end is. But anyways, yeah, they have a solid tight end there, but you need a true number one receiver. Like I said, I think Marquise Brown could be a number two receiver, but you need a legit number one receiver. It's a guy who can make all the catches, run the entire route tree, can you know, in my opinion, what I like as number one is a guy who can stretch your field too. So I think that's what the Ravens need. Their offensive line is solid. Obviously, the run game is solid. Your defense is solid. That's really what this team's lacking is weapons for Lamar Jackson to throw to. Because I think that's probably what's hindering Lamar Jackson's development and progress is him not having a legit number one receiver like a D-Hop or DK Metcalf or what's the boy in Green Bay?
Devontae
Adams. God dang. Devontae Adams, Stephon Diggs. Guys who can run the entire route tree and then can take the top off. So if I'm the Ravens, I'm putting a call to Atlanta, even Dallas. Saying, hey, is Julio available in Atlanta? I'm saying, hey, Can we take Amari off of you, or maybe even Gallup? You know what I'm saying? You need a guy who can be a number one. I don't think Gallup's number one, but given what the Ravens have, I mean, he could definitely fit into that offense well. I'm not too familiar with the draft yet. I haven't really looked up prospects and seen what they're doing there, but I think that they definitely need to make sure they get Lamar Jackson a legit bona fide number one receiver. If they have a first round pick, that has to be a receiver. And if anything, they should probably trade up, because I know there's that the kid from Alabama who probably won't make it out of the top five. Devontae Smith, and then the kid from LSU, Jamar Chase. Those two guys are probably going to be gone, but every year you have at least four or five guys who are going to go in the first round. If I'm the Ravens and I'm really trying to go after a championship, especially with Lamar being in his freaky deal, you definitely want to make that move to get him that receiver, because I think that could be the difference. You see what happened with the Bills. They went and got Stephon Diggs, and that changed their entire franchise. You know what I'm saying? And you saw a couple of years ago whenever the Cowboys got Amari Cooper, changed the entire franchise. So with all pieces that the Ravens have, the Ravens are set up to be like – the Bills and Cowboys. All that they are is a receiver away, and they'll be able to take that next step forward.
Yeah, me personally, I'd rather take a established star in the NFL, especially if I'm going for a franchise receiver and I have a franchise quarterback. I know I have a franchise quarterback, just because I don't want to take a chance on the draft pick and end up wasting a year. I'd rather get an established guy like you mentioned and go out and get a Julio, go out and get an Amari. If Odell is healthy and, you know, his head is all right, I'd even go after an Odell. But, you know, I want somebody who I know is a surefire number one, not a guy who I'm trying to make into a number one, because they tried that in Pittsburgh with Juju. They thought, okay, we can get AB out of here and we'll make Juju Smith-Schuster the number one, and it didn't really work out that well, despite that him and Chase Claypool played well. So I think that, like you said, their glaring need is a number one receiver. You go out and get an established guy. If you have to spend a first-round pick, well, you would have spent that first-round pick on a number one receiver anyway, so it's worth the draft capital, because it's going to make your team better in the long run. Now, just looking at some of the other teams that made the playoffs, the Colts, the Rams, the Seahawks, you know, you have the Titans out there, the Bears, Saints, Browns, Steelers. Out of the rest of the playoff teams, just who are some of the teams that you think are going to stick around, and who are some of the teams that you think are, you know, they're done and that their playoff window is closed?
So I think that I love the Rams. I mean, I love their defense. I mean, they got to get their situation with Jared Goff figured out. Jared Goff is playing too inconsistent, especially for being a franchise quarterback. That's who's going to hold them back from getting to another Super Bowl. So I think that the Rams need to address that. I think also the Bears, they have to figure out who they're going to have as a quarterback. Trying this two quarterback system. Obviously, they don't believe in Trubisky. Trubisky knows it, so at this point, it's best to just move on and, you know, start from scratch. You know, build a team around your rookie quarterback. You have a really good defense. I don't know why teams overcomplicate things. You know what I'm saying? And guys get emotionally attached to these quarterbacks, and I'm just like, if he's not the guy, keep it moving. You wonder why New England, outside of this year, before they lost Tom Brady. You wonder why they're so good every year. You wonder why the Steelers were good. You wonder why Kansas City's good. Every team figures out their quarterback situation first and foremost. Once you figure that out, everything else is pretty easy because you know what you need to put around him in order to be successful. So I think, you know, those two teams I like. The Colts, I mean, they're another team who all they're missing now is a quarterback. Phil Rivers retires. I think the Saints now, they're going to be a completely different franchise. I could see them kind of slipping and kind of falling out of the playoff picture until they get their quarterback situation addressed. I know they had Jameis there thinking that he could possibly be Drew Brees' replacement, but I just don't see it. So I think they could fall out of favor. Pittsburgh, if Ben doesn't come back, whether he does come back, I don't know. I don't see it either because I think teams now know that they can't run the ball. So unless they address their running game in the draft, yeah, I can see the Steelers missing out on the playoffs again too. Missing out on the playoffs, that is, not missing again. The Browns, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and think they'll go back, but I just don't trust Baker Mayfield. He's too up and down for me. And on this season, he only played well whenever they had big leads. You know what I'm saying? But when it came time to throw them back into the ball game, he wasn't the reason why the Browns were as good as they were. It was a run game and the defense, and then he made a couple of throws to steal the game. For me, if you're going to be a franchise quarterback, you have to be the reason why your team wins. You have to throw your teams into to win the game. You have to be the reason why. You can't be just going along for the ride, because whenever you play the Kansas Cities, the Ravens, if you send teams like that, if you got to be able to go, because those games are going to be, okay, last man with the ball wins. And if you can't match them, then you'll lose. So
now there are some established veteran quarterbacks out there, you know, mainly named, Matthew Stafford and Matt Ryan, Jimmy Garoppolo as well. Those three quarterbacks, hear those names. Who are some of these teams that may need a quarterback and can't afford to draft one that you – where do you see some of those guys fitting? Like a Matt Stafford, where would you see those guys going?
I don't really know. I mean, I think Jimmy Garoppolo, I think he's proven to be more of a fringe starter, more probably suited to be a backup than an actual franchise quarterback starter. Matthew Stafford, he needs to go wherever they need a quarterback. If it's me, if I'm him, I'm only going to want to go to the Colts. I want to go to the Bears. Hell, even the Rams, teams that pretty much are just a quarterback away from being a playoff and Super Bowl contender. If I'm Matthew Stafford, you know what I'm saying? Who else did you mention?
It was Matt Stafford, Matt Ryan, and Jimmy G. Those are the three.
I mean, I think with Matt Ryan, I think if it's me, I mean, I if it's me, I mean, he could stay in Atlanta, but I think at this point he'll probably be better suited with getting a fresh start somewhere else. I think he can still play. I mean, he's not a bad quarterback at all. I just think that sometimes change of scenery can kind of rejuvenate and revitalize your career, you know. So I think that's what Matthew Stafford, and especially Matthew Stafford, because I mean, he's been in Detroit. They haven't been anywhere close to being competitive in the playoffs. If they even get there, Matt Ryan, he led the Falcons to a Super Bowl, so you know he can get it done. It's just going to be a matter of what's the right fit, what's going to be the pieces are around him, and then Jimmy G. Yeah, I think he should. I think Jimmy G should definitely. I think San Francisco should let him go, and from what I've heard, from different analysts. Talk about Deshaun Watson. San Francisco's where Deshaun Watson should want to go. I mean, that team is primed for him to they can get to a Super Bowl with him there. I mean, because he's proven that he doesn't really need a whole lot to get there. Just give him a legit number one receiver. He doesn't even need that. Just give him a decent defense and he can win you some games. Deshaun Watson by himself is at least worth divisional conference championship. You know what I'm saying? So whoever he ends up getting traded to, if he gets traded, if he goes to the right situation, if he makes sure he goes to the right situation, yeah. I think if he goes to the Jets, yeah, they're going to be a couple of years away, but he takes them from being like 3 to 5 years away to maybe 2 or 3 years away from being a contender. You know what I'm saying? I think if he goes to San Francisco, they're a contender next year. So
yeah, for sure. If I'm Jimmy G, I'll just try to go re-link back up with Bill Belichick and just rekindle that. I worked it, like it worked for him there. He was successful there, and I think Bill's more bought into him because he's a younger guy, and he kind of already fits his mold. He knows the system. Boom, you fix that problem. And Bill's not a guy who I think is going to want to go and draft a franchise quarterback that he's going to have to pay a whole lot of money. Jimmy G, he'll pay a little bit more than average, and you know he can be able to get away with it. He also knows he has the leverage with Jimmy G because, look, you've proven that you're a spotty starter, but if you work in my system, boom, you can work and you can win. So that's how that works with that. But
the Patriots are going to definitely need to address some needs. Their offense was pathetic. And it wasn't, in my opinion, wasn't fair to Cam Newton because he didn't have anybody legit to throw to. I mean, he had a receiving core of backups to throw to as his starting receivers and tight end. So for me, they definitely need to pay attention in the draft to drafting receivers, tight ends. Their offensive line's good, especially if once some of these guys who opted out because of COVID, once they all come back, and on defense, once all those opt-outs come back, they'll be back in the playoffs. I think they could have went to the playoffs if Cam Newton had – if the Patriots had all those guys who opted out all playing, they could have been a playoff team. I think it wasn't fair to him. So that's why like people are – now Cam Newton didn't play well himself, but again, given what he had, I mean, I don't know how he's supposed to play well with – playing with backup tight ends and receivers and things like that. So I think that you definitely need to make sure that you get some weapons. Bill Belichick needs to stop being a cheap GM and just pay top money for one of these receivers. No, go be aggressive. Go get Odell if you can get him. Go get Julio if you can get him. Go get, you know, one of these guys out that are out here that you need, that you know you need. Will Fuller is probably going to be, he probably won't be back in Houston, especially if Deshaun Watson leaves. So he's a free agent. So if I'm Bill Belichick, there's some options out there for you to get it done.
Absolutely. All right. Now, just wrapping up all the playoff teams and looking at the rest of the teams that are trying to reemerge. You know, you have a lot of coaching hires that have come out. There's only one team left, the Houston Texans, who are yet to hire a head coach. But you know, you have teams like the Jets, who hired Robert Saleh, supposedly a well-liked guy. You have Jags hiring Urban Meyer and Arthur Smith going to Atlanta, and so on and so forth. But just out of the teams who have made new head coaching hires, who have you liked, and who do you think missed the ball or missed the mark on him?
So I think that the best hire of the cycle has Robert Saleh with the Jets. No surprise there. He's a well-respected guy within the league. What he did with San Francisco's defense is really encouraging. I think that's what they're going to need to be in order for the Jets to reemerge. This build, it's kind of like the Rex Ryan years, you know, build the team through defense, run the ball, and then let Sam Darnold come along slowly. Cause I think he can be a good quarterback in this league. He just needs to be in the right situation with the right coach being staff around him and right team around him. So I think that was the coaching hire I liked the most. The one that I was like, what for was, the Lions head coach. Guy's never been a coordinator. He was I think he was the
tight end
head coach.
He was the assistant head coach and tight ends coach in New Orleans just recently. But
So I mean, I don't know if that's why they hired him, because he was an assistant head coach. Because me personally, I don't know what assistant head coach really does or what they're responsible for. I think it's just a title and just get paid. And I guess you become the head coach if the coach gets fired or goes down or whatever. But for me, I think that was the one hire I was like, you need a guy who can get this team going like right now. You know what I'm saying? To me, Leslie Frazier, Eric Bieniemy, not Jim Caldwell, but Leslie Frazier.
Why not Jim Caldwell?
Because he was already there and they fired him.
Oh yeah, sure did. I forgot.
They fired him even though he had a winning record, or at least a better record than Patricia. So yeah. I don't think Caldwell would want to go back there, but I definitely think that that was the one coaching hire who I was like, for. Who else got hired? My hire wasn't a bad one either. the Falcons, I don't even know who that guy is. I mean, this coaching cycle, I mean, hiring cycle.
No, there was a literal theme. I mean, because for me, I'm a GM executive type of thinker. I mean, you know, just from the standpoint, I look at your coaching staff, and you can tell a lot about a team based off of the guy they hired. Like I'm the one who I'll go once you hire a head coach, I'm gonna go look at them. The first thing I'm gonna go do, I'm gonna look at your coaching tree and where you coached at and what your track record is of success, right? And what this cycle has proven is just the common theme that is happening in the NFL. They're going to go get an OC, and then they're going to go, like, this is cycle specifically, a whole bunch of DB coaches have now become the defensive coordinators to these new hires. If you look at it, I know the Chiefs, they hired a DB coach. The Eagles, all these coaches basically just said, okay, we're going to take the OC from some top-ranked offense, and then we're going to take their DB coach, and boom, that's going to be our hiring cycle. So we'll see how that formula works. I don't understand why you don't take the established guy. If I'm a owner, I'm going and I'm taking an Andy Reid assistant, especially if he's an offensive guy. Boom, you're the head coach. Do what you will with your staff, because that's worked. It worked with Doug Peterson for a little while until, you know, things start, you know, everybody sort of got comfortable in Philadelphia. It worked with Frank Reich, you know, until Andrew Luck got hurt and retired. It worked for Matt Nagy a couple years until Mr. Biskey, you know, didn't play well. But, I mean, Andy Reid assistants work. The one assistant you don't want to go, you don't want to get a Bill Belichick assistant if you're not named Brian Flores or Mike Vrabel. And both of those guys are really good leaders of men who can galvanize and who can communicate. So there's a key with those two guys. Everybody else, Bill O'Brien, Patricia, those guys were just on Bill Belichick's staff that really didn't have any substance to them. But, you know, I think we're wrapping up this episode. You know, there's a lesson in all this, too, with all these games and, you know, what we're talking about in terms of building a team and everything. I think for young players, right, and I want to hear what you think. You know, there's this debate in sports, both in basketball and in football. You know, football, it's the whole transfer portal, transfer culture, and, you know, people believe in, oh, players shouldn't transfer. You should stick it out. In the NBA, there's the stigma of, you know, player empowerment and why are guys switching teams and going to better situations. For me, look, now more than ever, guys understand, I'm not going to sit here and let these organizations waste my career. If I'm not in a situation that is conducive to me being successful, I'm going to go somewhere that is. You know, you look at Aaron Rodgers, where the organization isn't doing everything they can to put the records of pieces around him. Look at the Patriots. They're struggling because they won't put the records of pieces around their quarterbacks. But then you look at places like, you know, Tampa Bay. They went and got Tom Brady. Tom Brady thought that was an appealing situation because they were willing to do what was needed to make a good team. It's not about, you know, giving the power over, but having winning habits and building a winning culture. You look at the Chiefs, winning culture. And so just talk about that.
So I mean, for me, like, whenever I hear about people giving credit to guys like the NBA, for example,
people give more credit
and respect to guys who stayed and played their entire career in one place versus the guys who leave and go and quote unquote chase championships. For me, I don't think anything's wrong with that, because in the end, this is the thing that I think people miss.
Yeah,
is especially in today's age, where there's so much money out there, but there's certain things that you got to do to get the money, which is winning a championship. Now, in football, you don't have as much freedom to be able to move around and do what you want to do versus the NBA. I mean, the NBA is set up to where you can do that now, because if the NBA wanted to, they can absolutely make it to where players, once you sign, you're stuck with that team for a couple of years before you can force your way out, right? But because the players make so much money, they're not missing. They don't care if they don't get paid 1 year or 2 years. You know what I'm saying? They'll sit. But I think the thing is with the NBA and this whole, well, guys should stay in one place, and I don't like that, because for me, a guy has to do what's best for him. Because you saw what happened. Because for me, I saw what happened to LeBron James his first time in Cleveland. LeBron James would never have left Cleveland, he might have not have won a championship ever. Why do I say that? The owner literally was not willing to go out and sign any free agents, nor did any free agents want to go there. Now, some people say because they want to go play with LeBron, what have you. I don't know. I don't think it's LeBron is the reason why people, because Anthony Davis wanted to go play with LeBron. You know what I'm saying? Chris Bosh wanted to go play with LeBron and D Wade. So you can, and that's just people who want to hate on LeBron James and whatever. Like, I'm at this point, like, I get and understand why people are going to hate on guys like LeBron James and Brady. You hate seeing people be so great at a sport and know that they're great and are unapologetic about being great. You know what I'm saying? So for me, it doesn't make sense for a guy to sit in one place his entire career and never win a championship. But then we want to give him more respect than the guy who left and got a championship. I just don't get down with that. Because for me, if you're a competitive and you're seeing that what the organization is doing is not putting you in the best position possible to be competitive, what are you supposed to do? Just sit there and be like, well, I'm just going to make my money. And no, I didn't leave. I just stayed and not win a championship. Well, no one remembers the guys who didn't win championships. I mean, who do we talk about in terms of the greatest players of all time? Guys who all won championships.
Facts.
We don't talk about Charles Barkley, who never won a championship. We don't talk about Reggie Miller or Karl Malone, guys like that who were phenomenal players, but they never won a championship.
There's that and to them, you know, like, or the yeah, but I call them the yeah, but players, right? Where, and I'm sure LeBron was smart enough to see this. I'm not going to let y'all do to me what y'all did to Reggie Miller and Karl Malone, where y'all keep saying, because I decided to stay here in Cleveland with this terrible organization.
And besides, like, people sit there and say, well, sit there and tell me all the time why Michael Jordan's better than LeBron James. It's because championships. So all these guys who you want to say, I mean, like this guy, like Karl Malone and Charles Barkley and Reggie Miller, they're all good, but they didn't win a championship though. So how good were they? I think they're phenomenal, but in the end though, based on you all thinking of championships as the end all be all, they're not as good because they ain't win a championship. Now, if they would have left and won a championship, then also now it's, oh, well, he had to leave to go get a championship. And it's like, sometimes, like, there's coaches and owners who are better than others. People, especially when you're talking about the NBA, say, oh, coaching doesn't matter. There's a reason why Jordan won 6 championships straight. There's a reason why the Lakers won all the championships with Phil Jackson, and the Heat are where they are because of Pat Riley. And coaching matters. So for me, if you're not in a situation where you have a really, really good transcendent coach, then your chances of winning a championship are much lower, unless you go link up with one or two other guys and say, hey, this is what we need to do in order to win, because the talent level is so much more, you know what I'm saying? And now your top 2 or 3 teams in each conference have probably a combined, probably most of the top 30 to 50 players in the league. Mm. So, yeah. And then in terms of the NFL, I mean, I think that's more on the players, because the players don't know how to negotiate CBAs that empower them, because that's what it boils down. In the NBA, those guys, they sat out and they sat and they're like, well, we won't play. We'll miss games.
Yep.
In order to get what we want, the CBA. NFL players, unfortunately, are unwilling to do that. And I get why, because I mean, the money that they get versus the NBA players get, it's not the same. But in the end, though, it's going to take a year, a season of sacrifice. You're going to maybe have to sacrifice, you know, a couple game checks to get what you want. There's no reason why the most dangerous sport in all pro sports has no guaranteed contracts, has the least amount of benefits, doesn't have fully guaranteed. I mean, this is, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me.
You gotta know how to play the game, man, and you gotta know how to, you know, negotiate and fight for what you want. You know, the NBA players, like you said, as much stigma and as much as they get the label of, oh, they're entitled and they're coddled and whatever the case may be, they know how to get shit done. They know how to get, you know, the goals and the benefits that they need done, and they know how to negotiate. It's the same thing that NFL players need to do. Are you willing to make the requisite sacrifices to get the things that you want done or not. If not, okay, fine. But, you know, in the end, I think what it comes down to is that now more than ever, for any person who's playing a game, you know, I always advise people, do what's in the best interest of you. If you feel like you're putting in your all and you know you're putting in your all, and you see a situation and it's not working out for you or it's not helping you be successful, you don't see winning happens, then by all means, you know, go somewhere else, try something else. Sometimes scenery is good. But, you know, what I do tell young players that I mentor is make sure that you're holding yourself accountable and you're doing what you need to do first. If you think that it's because I'm not getting the playing time or I'm not getting my way, I'm going to leave, well, you're still going to run into problems wherever else you go. So as long as you're covering yourself and you know you're covering yourself and you know you're doing what you need to do to help the team be successful, if after you've fully assessed that and you say, okay, this team isn't where I want to be, and I want to do something else, so I want to try something else, but then I have no problem with guys deciding to take their own fate into their own hands and going and doing something that's in the best interest of them. Because in the end, if it's a college who wants to bench you for another guy, they'll do it in a heartbeat. If it's an NBA team that wants to trade you for a guy who they think is better than you, they'll do it in a heartbeat. They'll make you move your family. In the NFL, they'll cut you and non-guarantee your salary. So in the end, this is business, and it's a cutthroat world you live in. So it is what it is.
Yep, absolutely.
Just wrapping up everything, you know, definitely a great NFL season that has been able to be had, you know, despite dealing with COVID and, you know, the battle of the pandemic. But, you know, we have a great Super Bowl in store for us, as well as it's been a great kickoff to the NBA season. So more games to look forward to, and hopefully everything can go smooth and guys can be as safe as they can. But that's a wrap for this episode of Four Insight. I want to thank my brother, Bernard, for coming on with me again. Bernard, appreciate you.
Absolutely.
All right. You can catch this episode on YouTube, Anchor, Spotify, and all platforms streaming podcasts. Appreciate it.